From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's abrupt decision last week to pull U.S. forces out of northern Syria has left many people scratching their heads. U.S. troops had been a bulwark of protection for Kurdish fighters who had led the fight to defeat the Islamic State. Turkish airstrikes began immediately after the U.S. withdrawal in northern Syria, leading to the freeing of hundreds of ISIS prisoners and to Kurdish fighters being forced to align with the Syrian government. Russian troops are now moving into the military vacuum in a region that appears to be free of U.S. influence, at least for now. My guest is Dr. Stephen Zunis, a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He's also senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, which is a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. And he's an associate editor of Peace Review. Welcome to the program, Dr. Zunis.
Good to be with you again.
So first, let's talk about why you think Trump did what he did in pulling U.S. forces out. It appears as though a phone call from Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan may have been what pushed him to do it.
It does appear to be a rather impetuous decision. It was done following this phone call with the autocratic Turkish ruler. Some people speculated that given the Trump's heavy investments in Turkey and his liking of these kind of populist strongmen, that it had very little to do with any kind of broader strategic, much less ethical or legal concerns. And apparently it was done without consulting pretty much anybody in the military, intelligence, or diplomatic community. And indeed, it's been sort of the chaotic nature of the U.S. pullback that has been a part of the reasons that, you know, it's been such a bloody mess.
So let's talk about what exactly is happening. And actually, even before we go there, what role were the U.S. Troops in northern Syria actually playing? Were they indeed fighting alongside Kurdish fighters, or even just providing a measure of protection from both Syria and Turkey and ISIS?
Well, the United States did provide the Syrian Defense Forces, which are dominated by a Kurdish militia known as the YPG. They're one of the very few armed groups in that part of the world that have a real social base. The YPG and the areas they controlled set up these autonomous, semi-democratic enclaves where people could actually elect their leadership, where they ensured representation of women and minorities. It wasn't exactly the anarchist paradise that some people are trying to depict it as, but it was certainly relative to most areas in that part of the world, a fairly progressive and democratic enclave. And the irony, it is traditionally very much of a leftist movement. Initially Marxist-Leninist and more, again, towards a more decentralist, quasi-anarchist direction in recent years. But they shared a common enemy in ISIS. And the United States supported YPG, SDF forces, in fighting ISIS. They were not a puppet or a proxy or anything like that of the United States. They would have fought regardless. But the United States did give them some very important air and artillery support, as well as some arms and the use of some advisors. I think it'd be a mistake, though, to say that the purpose was to protect the Kurds. It was we're willing to use the Kurds to fight a common enemy. This is unfortunately one of a long sorted history of the U.S. Setting up and goading on Turkish allies to fight and then abandoning them to the slaughter.
Now, Turkey's justification is that the Kurdish fighters are a terrorist group. And, you know, some have suggested that basically the YPG, who you mentioned, is a part of the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers Party, which has been designated a terrorist group. Can you clear that up?
Well, the Kurds are the largest nation without a state. There are about 35 million of them, and they're divided between about a half dozen countries, including Turkey and Syria. And the YPG has been closely affiliated with the PKK over the years.
And it's spun out of the PKK, right?
Yes. And the PKK is, but you know, they have not engaged in outright acts of terrorism for quite a few years now. They've cleaned up their act in an important way, and certainly the YPG, they were focused on administering their area in northern Syria, fighting the remnants of ISIS, trying to prevent the Assad regime from bringing in forces to their area, where the Kurdish populations have traditionally been discriminated against by the Arab-led Syrian government. So the idea that they were somehow a threat to Turkey is pretty far-fetched, frankly.
And Turkey's other excuse or reasoning for requiring the U.S. to pull out troops was to establish some sort of peace corridor between Turkey and Syria. Turkey also is home to a huge number of Syrian refugees that Turkey had in recent weeks been forcibly trying to repatriate into Syria. So can you explain that a little bit, what this idea of a safe corridor means?
Well, that area of Syria under SDF YPG control had been about the most peaceful area in that part of the Middle East for some time. And again, there were no threats against Turkey. I think many people fear that the Turks are going to do is that effectively ethnically cleansing the indigenous Kurdish population and then moving a large number of Arab Syrian refugees that have been seeking sanctuary in Turkey into that area, essentially washing their hands of it.
And in fact, in an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, Erdogan wrote on Monday that Syria's refugee flows of violence and instability have pushed us to the limit of our tolerance. He said Turkey is stepping up where others failed to act. He had also threatened Europe with a flood of refugees if they failed to support him effectively. I mean, which I thought was just kind of such a racist statement. You know, if here are these you know, thousands of Arab refugees that will flood your continent. We know you don't want them because they are, you know, sullying the white character and nature of the European population. Therefore, help me push them back into Syria. He doesn't seem to be hiding his goal here.
Exactly. I mean, Turkey has been extremely burdened by the refugee flow. They have not gotten the support that's needed to really take care of the situation. But the idea of unburdening himself by ethnically cleansing Kurds and moving and force the refugees back into Syria is certainly not the way to go about it. And what's disturbing in many ways is this is very reminiscent of what Israel did between 1978 and 2000 when they set up a supposed safe corridor / buffer zone in southern Lebanon, ostensibly for self-defense. But indeed, it was a very long and brutal military occupation, which ended up effectively leading to the creation of Hezbollah, which ended up being a far more radical and threatening force than the PLO had been when they had effective control over that area. And that Israeli occupation was supported by a broad bipartisan majority in Congress. And so, perhaps Erdogan felt he could get away with doing something similar in northern Syria.
Now, the Russian forces, I understand, have also started filling that military vacuum left behind by the U.S. Russia has supported in a very big way the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. It has been Syria's strongest ally and actually routinely directly strikes targets inside Syria. What does the presence of Russian forces in northern Syria mean?
I don't think that is a huge factor because most of the forces coming in are indeed Syrian government forces. They do have some Russian advisors and support people involved. I'd be cautious about falling into the kind of narrative you're hearing from more hawkish opponents of Trump's move, saying that you know, this that we need to keep troops there to keep out the Russians and Iranians or whatever, because even though, you know, the Russian-Iranian support for Syria has been horrific in the sense that it has better enabled the Assad regime to engage in the atrocities, the war crimes and the like, I'd certainly like to see Russian-Iranian forces out of there. There's something a little wrong with saying we get to bring troops into a country against that government's will because we don't like the fact that they are allied and have brought in troops of countries we don't like. That, you know, the real problem with U.S. troops there indeed was the risk of, even though supposedly we were all on the same side of fighting ISIS, you know, there could be a kind of direct confrontation with between American and Russian forces or American and Iranian forces, which would then be used as an excuse to attack Iran or whatever. So I think there has, in fact, and so let me mention, I think there is a strong case to be made for U.S. On legal grounds and on other grounds for U.S. troops to withdraw from Syria. However, what Trump has done, as at least as of now, it is not actually withdrawing troops from Syria. It's just redeploying them away from the northern border, so Turkey can go in and oppress the Kurds and take over over that area, and that and the U.S. Role again was never about protecting the Kurds, but the geopolitical gamemanship. If the U.S. is going to withdraw, and again, I believe it should. It should be in a negotiated fashion, in an orderly fashion, in a way that says to Turkey before they cross that border, saying, if you cross that line, you're going to have, you know, severe sanctions placed against you. We're going to cut off military aid and cooperation, and just be very, very clear about that. Instead, what Trump did, in effect, was not only not withdraw troops, but just pull them back in these particular areas and effectively give Turkey a green light to go ahead with the ethnic cleansing and the killings that we're seeing unfolding right now.
And I want to get to the sanctions that Trump has imposed or says he's imposed. But before that, what about the hundreds of Islamic State prisoners that Kurdish fighters were holding? We're seeing some reports. Well, first, Trump claimed that Kurdish fighters were releasing ISIS prisoners as they were escaping the area. Now we're seeing reports that Turkish fighters have been deliberately releasing ISIS prisoners and even bombed prisons or places where these people were being held are leading to hundreds of them escaping. The U.S. military apparently left behind dozens of, quote, high-value ISIS militants slash prisoners. Do these moves by the U.S. suggest that it could be undoing its the battle that it backed against ISIS that had sort of largely been won?
Well, generally, if you are an armed force in hasty retreat, taking care of your POWs is a pretty low priority. So it's not at all surprising that these ISIS-related prisoners are being released, whether they are just able to escape because they're no longer guarded or because the Turks have come in and made a conscious decision to let them go. Most of them appear actually to be wives and children of ISIS fighters, and there's some question about whether they should have been held for this longer time period in any case. But there are indeed apparently some ISIS fighters that are being released. Even more disturbing is that there are some Turkish-backed paramilitaries that have in fact been capturing unarmed Kurds and even executing them, including a woman who is a prominent feminist and leader of a political party. There are all sorts of nasty things going on right now in the areas that Turkey is taking over. It's a very fluid situation, and it's not just a humanitarian nightmare, but a security nightmare as well.
Now, in the as U.S. troops were pulling back, President Trump claimed that he would destroy Turkey's economy if Turkey were to unleash violence, if Turkey were to attack Kurdish fighters. This was Trump's justification or defense of his own policy. And indeed, on Monday, he said that he has imposed sanctions on Turkey. Are those threats real?
I'm dubious, frankly, if Trump was really concerned about this, he would have, you know, laid out a red line before agreeing to withdrawal and before the invasion by Turkish forces. Until there's something real concrete measures coming through, I kind of doubt there's going to be much in reality, because indeed the United States does have a fair amount of leverage on Turkey. But, you know, the U.S. has supported Turkey for decades, even through some very brutal right-wing dictatorships that were involved in thousands of extrajudicial killings, even when Turkey invaded Cyprus in 1974, you know, even when they're engaged in a genocidal campaign against their own Kurdish population in the 1990s, resulting in tens of thousands of deaths, destruction of over 3,000 villages. I mean, Turkey's gotten away with a lot of stuff because the U.S. has, up till now, under both Republican and Democratic administrations, refused to exercise the kind of leverage that we have. And I'd be very surprised if Trump becomes the first to do so.
So the sanctions that Trump said that he imposed on Turkey were announced on the same day that Vice President Mike Pence announced that he and National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien would be leading a delegation to Turkey. Is this just the administration attempting to do PR in the wake of what looks like, by all measures, a disastrous policy decision?
That's my guess, but who knows? I mean, I think if there is enough pressure from members of Congress, of the American public, you know, maybe there can be some kind of of real, genuine pressure put on the Turkish government. But I'll believe it when I see it.
Now, the withdrawal of U.S. forces was something from that particular region. And the pulling back, as you've said, is what it really is interesting, given how far and wide U.S. forces are deployed in various parts of the Middle East. For example, on the very same day that Trump announced that he was going to be with pulling troops out of northern Syria, the Afghanistan war marked its 18th anniversary. This is the longest official war the U.S. has ever waged. And Trump abruptly ended peace talks with the Taliban. On that anniversary, he made no mention of that war. One could argue that of all the troops that are serving in all the parts of the world, all the U.S. troops, that is, the U.S. troops in northern Syria ought to have been sort of low on the list of priorities for withdrawal, right?
Yeah, indeed. Again, I'm skeptical of U.S. deployment anywhere in that part of the world, but you know, one could make a much stronger case for U.S. Presence in northern Syria, given what we're seeing, than virtually anywhere else. Indeed, at the very time he announced the pullback of U.S. troops from the Turkish-Syrian border, he announced the deployment of thousands of more troops to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
The brutal authoritarian, misogynist regime that's responsible for tens of thousands of Yemeni deaths. And despite and supposedly to counter an alleged threat from Iran, but remember, Saudi Arabia literally has six times the annual military budget that Iran does. They are far more powerful militarily. They don't need American forces at all, even if you were to assume that was a justifiable use of American personnel. So it shows, I think it illustrates just the ridiculous priorities of this administration. So I think it's really important that those who are skeptical of U.S. military intervention abroad, on the one hand, to attack Trump from the right in terms of really pushing the idea of a greater military involvement in Syria or elsewhere. But at the same time, we ought to be very clear that he is not taking an anti-war position. He's not taking an isolationist position. He's not taking any kind of a principled anti-militarist position at all. This is very much part is his appeasing of Turkey is along the same lines as appeasing of Saudi Arabia and the other tyrannical regimes in that part of the world who he seems so fond of supporting in one way or the other.
Perhaps we ought to be trying to understand Trump's foreign policy in the Middle East entirely through the lens of real estate dealings of his family. There are no Trump Towers or interests in northern Syria or Afghanistan or Iran, but, you know, Saudi Arabia and Turkey, where Trump has been interested in business dealings, are where he seems to, you know, reward those who he does business, has dealings with. It's you know, and of course, there's a whole Ukraine issue. Speaking of Ukraine and the impeachment issue, Liz Cheney announced on Tuesday that the reason Trump had decided to pull troops out of northern Syria was because he was facing an impeachment crisis at home, implying that the Democrats had caused all of this by trying to impeach Trump. What do you make of this?
That's so ridiculous, especially since you have all these Republicans who have been defending Trump despite all of these flagrant wrongdoing, evidence of impeachable offenses regarding pressuring Ukraine with a threat of withholding military aid to go after the Bidens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That they've been silent or even defending him on that, but they're really freaking out about this Syria move. So you know, if you wanted, so in fact that if Trump wanted to boost his standing by responding to an impeachment threat by doing this, has done just the opposite. It's turned a lot of people against him that had been on his side.
Right. In fact, it has succeeded in potentially alienating his only allies or his strongest allies. What do you think would happen next? We are at a moment where basically Turkey has had its way. Kurdish fighters are reeling. ISIS fighters are potentially regrouping after being released. Could we see that area plunge into greater violence? The Syrian refugees who are the least at fault are being used as pawns by various countries. You know, what of them? What do you think? I know it's always difficult to ask for predictions, but just based on your best educated guess, what do you think is going to happen in the next few days and months in that area?
It's hard to imagine. It's going to be pretty horrific at whatever happens. We're already seeing the refugee flows of Kurds from the northern border area. One thing about the U.S. troops there is one of the good things they were doing is that they were helping to coordinate the provision of relief supplies and that kind of thing. But with U.S. forces in disarray, there's going to be even less ability to do that. So we're certainly looking at a humanitarian crisis. I'm not sure how far Turkey will go. I don't know. I think they'll quite achieve the more maximalist position that Erdogan and some of his folks want in terms of expanding direct Turkish control, but they're definitely going to hang on to an area for some time, and it's going to create, I think, greater instability, greater suffering, and potentially the resumption of more radical elements, not just in terms of ISIS and these Islamist extremists, but some of the more radical Kurdish elements as well, who in recent years, you know, had cleaned up their act quite a bit and had to refrain from acts of terrorism. So it's a very difficult situation. I mean, this will, I think, rank as one of the worst foreign policy fiascos that the United States has been engaged in. Again, not that the U.S. should stay indefinitely in Syria, but and when you get yourself involved in these kind of difficult situations, you got to be thoughtful. You got to be thorough. You have to plan. You have to consult both with people on the ground and people who are familiar with the area, and not just engage in impulsive decisions as Trump has done,
right,
especially when you have such horrific consequences.
Of all the foreign policy moves that he ought to have made, this one was certainly not the one that it seems as though anyone would like to see him make, other than Turkey and, you know, the Trump family's business interests. Stephen, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Really appreciate having you on.
Sure. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as the coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. And we've been discussing the consequences of Trump's policies in northern Syria. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.